Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Alaska, and on the line is our co-host, Michelle. How are you?
I'm fine. You're sounding a little bit far away, just to let you know.
Well, I am 3,200 miles away, and the weather's kind of bad here. It looks like we got quite a bit of wind up here in Willow, so if we lose internet connection, you know the drill. We'll log back in and continue on. So what's going on in Denver, Michelle?
Well, you know, I have to say that I'm probably the envy of the country. We have snow on the ground. We have perfect skiing conditions, and I'm sitting here in short sleeves and jeans trying not to decide if I should put on sunscreen or not, because we're at 28 degrees.
28 degrees is pretty warm, especially when you're out running sled dogs. And yesterday I took the dogs out for about a 25-mile run. They'd had about a week off, and they did one of the better runs that we've done all season, and looking very forward to right after I'm done with the show today, taking a run up the Yetna River and doing about a 3 or 4 hour run this afternoon.
Sounds like a good time. You watch that wind, though.
I'll do so for sure. I hope we can avoid the moose. It's my understanding that a moose chased off a team right here in our trails in the backyard this past week when we were up in Oregon, and I guess it put those people for quite a scare.
Yeah, I still keep telling you need a gun, even if it's just a flare gun or something.
Maybe I could get one of those Red Ryder BB guns with a compass in the stock, then I won't get lost.
I'm sure that would have no effect whatsoever on a moose.
So there you go. So today we have our special guest back, a good friend of ours, Sid Corpy. She wrote a book called Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. And you can find that book right here on our Blog Talk Radio page, as well as through her website, goodgriefpetloss.com. Sid is calling in from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Sid, how are you?
I am very well, Robert, and hello, Michelle. And about your moose, you could just sort of lie there like a slug. It could be your only defense.
That is true. You know, Sid, a lot of people don't understand just how big moose are. They are huge.
Oh, I'm sure they're just terrifying in person.
And, you know, it's at that time of the year where they've had their calves and there's not a whole lot of food up here for them anymore because we have so much snow. So they're just running around through the yards and on the trails eating branches or whatever they can. And they're getting quite brazen out on the trails and around the dogs as well.
Oh, scary.
Yeah, so we'll look out for them and make sure everything's okay. But you know, they've been known to stomp a dog team or two, so we're looking very very closely at if a moose gets close, we'll have to hightail it the other way if it comes to that point.
Oh, definitely.
So we have you back on, Sid, for the award-winning Pettlitzer Prize. I know we did round one, I guess, what is that, about 3 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago now, and now we're at round two, and luckily Michelle and I were on the panel this time, and we got to help pick some of the winners for round two of the Pettlitzer Prize. So before we get into that, can you tell us what that is and what the buzz is about the Pettlitzer Prize?
Well, the Pettlitzer Prize is the pet-related writer's Pulitzer.
There you go.
It was something I came up with to further recognize and encourage people to write quality things about their pets. And it's a contest that's open to everyone. You can't have published your piece before this, but you can be a published author in other areas. Or you can be, as one of our writers is, a 9-year-old girl.
There
you
go.
As long as what you've done is quality, we want to see it. And it was a really delightful thing to go through all the entries, and I'm so glad you were on the panel because I didn't want to have to make all those hard decisions myself.
And, you know, there were a lot of great stories in round one and in round two. Can you give us a little synopsis about what round one was about so people can understand what this process is?
Well, the first time we did this, it was for pet-related poetry. And it was wide open, poetry, prose, limericks, what have you. And then I thought, well, let's expand it to another kind of writing. Let's do short stories for the second round. And then we'll be telling you more about the third round that's coming up, which will be persuasive essays. And we'll just kind of keep mixing things up so that, you know, even if you've entered before, you might have a new challenge ahead of you in a future round.
So when people submit these stories, articles, poems, whatever your round is at that point, how do they find out about you? What is the process to contact you?
Well, if they come to my website, goodgriefpetloss.com, and go to the blog page, there is a link right there to the Petlitzer Prize, and it'll tell you what the round is and what the rules are and how to submit.
There you go. So I forgot to give you an introduction, Sid. So if we can do that now, please do so. Who are you? What are you all about? Tell us a little bit about your book and some of your eclectic tastes that you have. I know we love to pick on you about those, and I love to share those here on the radio.
Well, my name, as you said, is Sid Corpy. I am an animal chaplain who works with people to help them prepare for, cope with, and move on after pet loss. I've written a book called Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, and have been really, really blessed and fortunate to have it win several literary awards, which is kind of why I'm kind of paying it back, but with the Petlitzer Prize idea. It's been given awards for spirituality and inspiration, the pets and animals category, of course, and it was also named Best Book of the Year by Premier Book Awards in the self-help category. So I'm really, really grateful that it's being accepted and acknowledged in a lot of different areas. And the book is, of course, available on your site, my site, all major bookstores. You can even request it from your library, and they can get a copy of it. And
so,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I can babble forever. You go ahead and interject something.
So if you will, tell us a little bit about your book. It's not just one of those self-help books where it says, do this plus this plus this, and you will get this result. It is truly a collection of stories as well as a way to help that grieving process when a pet passes on. So can you tell us a little bit about what the gist of the book is?
Well, I had written it to be a sort of a smorgasbord for anyone who is going through this loss of a pet, or it even applies to almost any major loss in your life. You don't have to read it page 1 to 300. You can go through it and pick the section that's calling to you at the time. There are sections on how to be prepared for pet loss, what signs to look for, when to decide that euthanasia is the right thing to do, how to deal with people who just don't get it and who, you know, give you no support. There's a large section about afterlife connections, both with humans and animals. These include many of my own stories and then also a lot of stories that I culled from people all over the globe about the human-animal bond. And then there's a section on how to memorialize and celebrate your pet's life, because the crying is very, very, very necessary and proper to go through, but at some point you want to turn those tears to happy tears with good memories and honor the pet, and then find ways to move on and actually thank your pet for what he or she taught you in life about living in the moment and loving unconditionally, so that you can go on and when you're ready, when enough time has passed and you've done your grieving, you can open your heart and your home to another needful animal. And that's kind of really honoring what your pet taught you. And, you know, it's a good way to counteract what a lot of people say is, this hurts too much, I'll never have another pet again. And it's natural to think that when you're in that much pain, but it really is important to move forward from that as well.
So what about the people that say, you know, get over it. He was just a dog. He was just a gerbil. He was just a parakeet. Why don't you just get over it, move on? It was just a pet.
it is really, really sad for those people, because what it means is they've never experienced what you have, that incredibly deep and selfless bond with an animal companion. And sometimes they may even understand, but they fear death so much themselves, or they fear the emotions that come with grieving so much, that they just want to dismiss it, belittle it, just turn it off so they can deny it's there. And all of these things are, you know, I look at them as lessons that those people will have to continually face until they learn them, because they're running from it. If you are there and feeling very sincere about your pain and your anguish, and you're working through it and you're facing it head on, you can get past it to a healthy, strong place a lot better than a person who is hiding and so fearful. So if you can reframe it as these people are actually kind of to be pitied in a way for their lack of compassion and their lack of experience that you've had, you can feel that much the richer, even though it's really, really painful in that moment.
So you said that you were an animal chaplain. What does that mean? I'm sure a lot of people, when they're thinking of that term, they think that you have this church where people come with their animals and, you know, they sing hymns and all this kind of stuff. What is an animal chaplain, and what do you do?
Well, recently I did an animal blessing in a parking lot of a strip mall. I don't have a church. I'm not affiliated with any particular church. I will do group things where, you know, I'll address groups about pet loss. I will do animal blessings, as I said, kind of celebrating the communion we have with our pets. And I am also available to help people on an individual or group basis if they need support through the pet loss process. If they're facing the decision, they can contact me through my website and we'll converse through email. I've called people when they've been really distraught and, you know, just kind of given them a shoulder to cry on for a time. It's sort of like grief counseling in a way. And then another thing that I do is, if you're in my area, the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul area, if you need someone to help you out with the euthanasia, if you want someone there with you, if you're doing the euthanasia at home, or if you're taking the pet to a vet and you just say, I need some backup, I need some support, I am available for that as well.
So this is the real deal then. People really do have this very sincere connection with their pets. And in your book, you don't just talk about dogs and cats. You talk about horses and all other types of things as well.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't matter what type of pet. It matters the depth of that connection. I just had my brain flash on the Tom Hanks movie, I think it was Castaway, where he developed this incredibly strong bond with a soccer ball named Wilson.
Right, right.
And when he lost it, that was his only companion, and it was devastating to him. Now, that was because he was so isolated, he, you know, didn't have any other choice, but it's a normal human response to seek connection. And for a great many of us, even though we've got the internet and Facebook and all of this, we are increasingly more isolated physically from other humans. And if, you know, typing messages back and forth isn't quite enough for you, you have a pet that's, you know, with you that you can have an actual, you know, tactile sensation. You're petting them, you're touching them, you're talking to them, and they're really present for you. So it's very natural that they form a strong bond. And I've had people who were allergic to any furred animals, and so one of them got very attached to his hermit crab. And
right.
my brother and his wife had lost their two beautiful Shelties many years ago, and it was so devastating for them. They didn't want to go there, but, you know, ultimately they can't be without animals. So now they have underwater African frogs in an aquarium. They have a black rat named Sammy and two Russian tortoises that hibernate and or live in their garden. So, you know, it doesn't matter at all what the kind of animal it is. It's It's just that feeling of being needed if you're human, and the feeling of being loved unconditionally from the animal as well.
Well, that pretty much sums it up right there. Go ahead.
Hold on a second. I got to lighten this up a bit. Now, when you said that you're an animal chaplain, this is how warped my head is. I automatically assumed that you can perform an exorcism on a mean, old, aggressive dog.
I thought your head would go to, I could perform marriages amongst chihuahuas or something.
Remember how I married you.
No, I don't do exorcisms, but I would imagine that you guys with your training facilities would be more apt to be able to rehabilitate a nasty old junkyard dog than I could.
Well, that's Michelle's thinking for us. I mean, we are huge horror fans. And speaking of horror, Sid, we have to get this in. We know that you're blossoming movie star in the B movie works of, what is his name, Christopher Mim,
M-I-H-M, yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I am actually going tomorrow and Monday, Valentine's Day, to finish the last three scenes in, wait for it, Attack of the Moon Zombies. It's just been a delightful time. Really, really strong cast. I mean, just because it's a B-movie, this gentleman just specializes in making new, old movies. They're set in the 50s. They're black and white. They're like what you would see in a drive-in movie creature feature back then. And it's wonderfully nostalgic and wonderfully cheesy. And still, the actors are actually top-notch. In most cases, you know, then they let my husband have a few lines, too, and he's not an actor at all. But it's just been so much fun. And if you have any curiosity about the type of movie I'm talking about, there is going to be on, actually tonight, I think it is 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, on the Monster Movie Channel. It's an online kind of thing hosted by Dr. Ivan Kryptosis, and it's a really fun character. This guy, you think cheesy in the movies, triple it for him, and he's going to be showing one of Christopher Mim's movies tonight called Cave Women on Mars, and that was actually the first one of his movies I saw, and I fell in love with the whole genre. And I stalked the poor fellow and sent him downloaded pictures of my high school acting trophy and said, "Proof, I'm talented. I've got to have something to do with your movies."
Right,
and, you know, as time has gone on, he actually met me and said, "Oh, she might have some ability. I don't know." And it's just been one of the best experiences of my life. And the fans of this particular kind of movie, I mean, I know we're a select group, but we are just diehard, and they're so fun. I mean, he has fans who have taken upon themselves to create little felt stuffed toys in the guise of all of his movie monsters, you know, the mutant bat creature from Terror from Beneath the Earth or the Oculon from Destination Outer Space. And she did them in blacks and grays, so they look like they did in the black and white movie. And they're like, a foot tall or something like that, stuffed toys that she made just because she's so crazy about his movies. And they've just been amazing. And what's different about Attack of the Moon Zombies is it's kind of been notched up a step because there is a very, very talented artist who makes the monster masks now that this is the first time he's doing that, and he made the zombies, and they're just phenomenally cool. And his name is Mitch Gonzalez. Got to give him a plug. And he will actually be with Ivan Kryptosis. He'll be in the chat room conducting some trivia questions about the Mimiverse, as they call it.
Well, you know what, Sid? I'm looking for a way to come down to Minneapolis, and I know I've dropped a couple of hints to you on email about a book project, but I'm looking for a way to come down there. I believe it's on May 25th, which is the premiere.
Oh, my gosh, yes, you've got to.
Yes, which is the Attack of the Moon Zombies premiere in Minneapolis.
Yes,
but
it's
let me tell you a little story very quickly before we move on. You know, I was really dreading moving up here to Alaska. You know, I had all those I Miss You blues and everything, and and one Saturday night, I turned on the local television channels here in Anchorage, and at 10:30 in the evening, they have on Elvira's Movie Macabre every Saturday night. And I remember writing Michelle saying, this is where I have to stay. I have to stay in Alaska because I have to be able to watch this every Saturday night at 10:30. And you know, those are the same type of movies as what you're talking about, the really cheesy movies.
Oh, absolutely. They're just some of them can be just god-awful, and they get to the point where they're so bad, they're awesome.
Right. So maybe we can show up there at the premiere. I'm still working on that.
So
and Michelle
love
is on the
that.
Line. And I think she's getting a hint right here that we need to contact Frontier and get a couple of tickets to Minneapolis.
But you're so subtle.
I know.
I missed the date that you said. You're
May 25th.
Yes.
May 25th.
Okay. Yes. There you go.
That is not even fair. That's my birthday weekend.
What
perfect
a weekend.
Gift for the wife. A movie premiere, and you can come, I mean, bring your tuxedo. This is a red carpet affair, and there will be cake.
Of course. I look forward. We're going to try to plan on that. It's always good to get away, and Michelle and I just had a quick 3-day weekend up in the Pacific Northwest, and I tell you, that really charged the batteries. Being 3,200 miles away from your significant other is very difficult, but we recharged our batteries a little bit. We had some good times in Portland and Seattle, and I look forward to hooking up again and look forward to meeting you as well. So we're going to try to plan that for the last weekend in May. But, you know, this is a dog show, but I always say, Sid, that we have to have lives outside of our jobs. And that's why we talk about crazy stuff like crazy horror movies and all that kind of stuff on this show. Because you know what? We do enjoy that stuff. It makes us who we are, and it makes us different in business. And it makes who you are, too. That's why I always bring that up when you and I talk, because you're such a very well-rounded person. Not only are you just an author and an animal chaplain, but you're a B-movie actress. You're the world-famous Flintstone collector.
Oh, it is true.
You have a dance studio, a 1950s dance studio in your attic. It is so cool to have you on the show, and you're one of our most popular guests by far. But let's talk about the Pulitzer Prize. We're talking to Sid Corpy, and she is the author of Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. You can find that right here on the Blog Talk Radio site or on her website at goodgriefpetloss.com. So let's talk about round two of the Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, it was a short story contest. People were to give us a story between 400 and 700 words. Their only guidance was that it be pet-related. It didn't have to be dogs or cats or anything in particular, but, you know, that was up to them. And we had plenty of challenges just to whittle things down, but we did wind up with honorable mention and first, second, and third place winners. I mean, we would have liked to have given out 19 or 20 awards, but it would get kind of silly at that point.
So what we do on the Dog Works Radio show is we read these on the air, and then, of course, you can have the winners listen to them anytime. We're available on iTunes and everywhere else on social media, and I think that gives them a kick, that especially they can have their story aired forever on the
bragging
beauty of
rights.
The internet. Yes. And they do receive a very cool certificate, or what I call a major award, for participating in this,
right? That's our third reference to a Christmas story so far.
There you go.
I love that. Keep counting, Ned. Keep counting. He'll get
Well, my ego, it's so fragile.
So do you have them handy? Are you ready to read?
I do. They're right here in front of me.
All right, let's go with it.
All righty. We will start with the honorable mention. which we all the judges on the panel unanimously agreed that this young writer needed to be acknowledged for sure. Her name is Kenna Arndt, and she lives in Appleton, Wisconsin, and she is a mere 9 years old, and she did just a lovely job with the story. I think she had written it for a class and was able to, you know, translate it to this contest. Her story is called Saving My Dog, Puggy. It was the afternoon, and Dad, Mom, and my younger brother Hayden and I were driving in the car to the animal rescue shelter to see a dog. Hayden and I played Nintendo DS for the whole 2 hours we drove there. When we arrived, I said, "This place looks like a dump." Mom said, "That is not nice. Do not say that in front of the desk lady." "Now, we are here to get a small dog, not a big dog." We walked into the building, and the desk lady showed us the dogs. I saw a large dog that had 14 puppies. I asked Mom, "Can I have one of those puppies?" But Mom said, "No, those puppies could be as big as their mother. Look how big that dog is." Then the desk lady showed us the beautiful puggle that we wanted to see. But the thing was, she was beat up, weak, and had bloody injuries from being attacked by another dog. The desk lady said, "She will be put to sleep next week." Mom said to the desk lady, "We will give her a whirl." So she gave us a leash, then we put the leash around the puggle's neck, and then we went into the woods to see how she would act. We each got a turn to walk the puggle. Mom said, "What do you think about this dog?" Dad said, "I like the dog, kids. What about you?" Hayden and I said, "We like the dog. She is cute and friendly." So we decided to buy her. She was only $100, and we decided to have her keep the name the shelter gave her, which was Puggy. We got in the car, and we were on the way home. When we were driving, I was playing with Puggy and petting her instead of playing Nintendo DS. We had a towel on the seat, so then Puggy got tired and fell asleep. I fell asleep, too. When we got home, it was nighttime. Hayden went to bed. Mom went to go get supplies for the dog, but Dad and I stayed to play with the dog to keep her company. Puggy was sniffing around because it was a new place for her. When Mom came back, she came back with a kennel, dog bowls, food, dog toys, and dog shampoo. Dad said, "Mom is home. Say goodnight to Puggy and go to bed." I went upstairs, said a prayer, and then went to bed. Little did I know that we not only saved Puggy's life that day, but we also saved the lives of the 7 puppies that she was carrying. Puggy was going to be a mommy. The end.
You know, I remember reading that one, and we read through these, I guess, what, around Christmas time, Sid?
Mid-January, actually.
Mid-January. And I remember reading that, and I can only imagine what Mom and Dad were thinking when little Puggy had all of her little pups.
Like, how many of these are we going to have to keep?
Right. But that was very well written for a 9-year-old, don't you think, Michelle?
Oh, yeah, I think she has a tremendous future in writing.
I do, too.
Really. I mean, it's really strong command of even dialogue and such. That's something that a lot of adult writers can't quite handle. So I was very impressed. Good job, Kenna.
Michelle, what do you think of that story?
That story was really, I enjoyed the story, but I wished that we could have heard what her parents did with the puppies, you know. always is quite a dilemma. But, you know, I think Kenna deserves the honorable mention, not only because she had the guts to write the story, but because she had the guts to send it in.
Yep.
Right.
Applause.
Right. Okay,
and maybe we'll have a Pulitzer Prize for sequels.
What happened to the puppies? All right, so let's talk about third place. Now we're into what they call the money round. So what is going on with third place?
Well, we have, go the opposite end of the spectrum, we have an award-winning published author. It's the author of 8-State Hurricane Kate, which was an award-winning story about animal rescue during Hurricane Katrina times. And the author's name is Jenny Pavlovic. She lives in Afton, Minnesota. And her story is called Give Me a Hug, Give Me a Break. My friend Sarah in Virginia rescued Chase, a suspected cattle dog collie mix, from a violent man who was going to shoot him for chasing sheep. When Chase first came to live with us, he discovered that he could get my undivided attention when I was sitting on the toilet. That's right, I said sitting on the toilet. When I'm the only person around, I don't usually latch the door. There's a stool next to the toilet that I use when bathing dogs or reaching for high places. One day, Chase pushed his way into the bathroom and put his front feet up on that stool. I hugged him and I told him how handsome he was and how lucky we were that he traveled all the way from Virginia to Minnesota to live with us. He ate that up, making up for lost time on the love front, and developed a habit of following me into the bathroom and putting his front feet up on that stool. Now he sometimes even does that when I'm standing at the sink. I used to think that it was a sign he needed a hug and would love to hear me tell him how handsome he is and how lucky we are to have him here. But I know it's more than that. If I'm having a really bad day, Chase might actually lead me into the bathroom to give me the hint, at which point I realize that I'm badly in need of a hug. Bandit, the Australian cattle dog, has the habit of bringing me the ball, rubber chicken, or tennis ball bone when I'm sitting at the computer. If I don't notice him right away, he'll whack me on the leg with the rubber chicken or drop the ball in my lap. He's not a very subtle guy. After all, he was bred to push around a herd of cows. What's one person? I used to think he was just ball-obsessed, but I've come to believe that he also pesters me because he doesn't want my fingers to grow onto the computer keys. He knows I need a break and wants to get me out to play. I call him my recreation director. It's the same deal with Chase, especially when he goes to that stool when I'm not sitting on the toilet. Chase just knows when I need a hug, just as Bandit knows when I need a break. They're really looking out for me, aren't they?
And, you know, when I read that story, Sid, I saw that connection that we were talking about earlier in the show, that connection that we have with our pets.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with the lady sitting on the toilet. It had something to do with that connection that we have with our dogs in this case.
Mm-hmm.
They
well,
know
and how they just reflect
them.
To us what's going on with us. And,
right, right.
And they're incredibly intuitive and in-tuned and... And, yeah, if we took the time to notice and listen more, we'd probably get a lot wiser in our lives.
I agree. Michelle, what do you think about that story?
I liked that story. It showed the human connection that we have with dogs. You know, that's how more and more people are starting to see their dog, by the way. You know, we're really starting to not only put human emotion to what our dogs are thinking or possibly saying to us, but we're also starting to recognize humanistic behaviors in our dogs. I'll never forget my grandmother's dog. His name was Keiki. She's from Hawaii, so that's where the name comes from. But she used to talk to the dog and would tell us kids what the dog was saying. And, you know, we all thought she was nuts. This is in the early 80s when... You know, I was raised on a farm where the dogs worked. They weren't part of the family like they are now. And that was, you know, just about 35 years ago. So things have really changed drastically just over the last three decades.
Mm-hmm.
Where that we really are recognizing not only the quality that dogs bring to our life, but the quantity that they allow us to see in ourselves.
I totally agree, and that's one of the reasons why we do what we do, is to maintain that connection that we have with, in our case, of course, with dogs, because there is that connection, and if you don't have that connection, that relationship will not flourish. And we spend a lot of time on that at Denver Dog Works, where the dog is a part of the family. That's why we encourage getting out and doing sports with your dogs, or even giving your dog a job, whether it be therapy work or service dog work, or, you know, any other type of job that you can think of for your dogs, because they are a part of the family and they are looked upon that way by the majority of society.
Oh, I keep trying to spray my dogs with end dust and have them clean my house.
Have you seen that commercial where the lady's upset about mopping the floor and there's that dog that I believe it's a poolie?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, what a great idea.
And just attach a stick and you're off.
There you go. All right. So that was honorable mention. And third place. So we're going
to I just wanted to say one really quick thing. Jenny Pavlovic kind of used the nugget from this story and is actually developing it into a children's book with the tentative working title, There's a Chicken in My Kitchen, Bandit's Big Birthday Blizzard. So
keep an eye out
for that in the future.
Sure, sure. And if she does end up publishing that, we'll definitely have to have her on the show for sure.
Ooh, I'll tell her.
There you go. So we're going to take a very quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to hear about second place as well as the first place winner and talk about round three of the Pettlitzer Prize. We'll be right back on DogWorks Radio.
At Denver DogWorks, we offer a service dog training program for individuals nationwide. Each and every service dog that is trained through Denver DogWorks and Michelle Forto and her team has an individualized training plan. Michelle trains for autistic, mobility, medical alert, and psychiatric service work. In each case, the needs of the individual are met, and training of each dog is specialized for their handler's specific needs. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog and takes a tremendous amount of patience, handling, and work from everyone involved, including the family members of the service dog recipient. If you are interested in finding out more about our service dog training program, please visit our website at denverdogworks.com or give us a call at 303-578-9881.
Dog Works Radio and Mush You Huskies is fueled by Native Performance Dog Food. If you want the best for your canine athlete or working dog, we recommend Native Performance Dog Food. Available at Dog Works Training Centers. Call 303-578-9881 for more information. Native Performance Dog Food.
Whether you're a Schnauzer Shakespeare or a Hound Dog's Hemingway in the making, perk up your ears. Dog Works Radio is teaming up with animal chaplain Sid Corpy, author of the award-winning book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, in presenting the Pettlitzer Prize Contest, the Pet-Related Writer's Pulitzer. Animal lovers can showcase their creative writing abilities for nifty awards and for the chance to have their works read live on Dog Works Radio. Categories range from poetry to short stories to persuasive essays and more. For more information, visit the blog page at www.goodgriefpetloss.com and click on the Pettlitzer Prize link.
You are listening to Dog Works Radio. We have the best and train the rest. Now back to the show.
And we are back. We have on the line Sid Corpy calling in from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She writes the book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss. It is a book about understanding the grief process of when you go through the loss of your pet, as well as our co-host Michelle calling in from Denver, Colorado. Are you guys there?
We are. I am.
I can't speak for Michelle. We are here and we are back. And what do you think about your sponsor spot there, Sid?
I think it's fabulous. And
well, we really do appreciate you being a sponsor of the show for sure and doing whatever we can to help you promote your book as well.
Thank you so much. No, it's very, very exciting. This is growing quickly from a little idea I had.
So in the previous segment, we talked about Ms. Corpy and her book, as well as the honorable mention and third place of round two of the Pettlitzer Prize. And if you will, Sid, because some people come in, you know, at the halfway point, briefly describe what the Pettlitzer Prize is for us.
It is a contest, kind of like the Pet-Related Writer's Pulitzer Prize. And it's open to all writers of all ilks and styles. And every round will be different. You know, sometimes it'll be poetry, sometimes short stories, sometimes essays, you know, and on, just to kind of keep things mixed up so that if you've submitted once, you can still look forward to possibly submitting again for another round. We have a panel of pet experts as judges, and we just really enjoy seeing the creativity that people have been sending in. I just wanted to acknowledge and support and encourage people who want to write about their animal companions.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of Twitter and Facebook. I do a lot of my postings on there, and I am surprised at all of the people that write about pets. There are hundreds of people that write blogs about pets. There's even people that set up Twitter accounts for their dogs, and the dog, quote-unquote, speaks for themselves on Twitter. And one of the probably the most popular is a lady, an actress named Chelsea Handler, and she has a dog named Chunk.
It's funny.
And he has one of the most popular Twitter feeds in America. People follow what Chunk is having to say. So this is something that a lot of people really get into. I think it's only second to what they call the mommy bloggers of people that write about what people write about on the internet, which is pets.
Mm-hmm. It's a thing that we're often very proud of.
It is. So let's talk about second place of round two of the Petlicer Prize.
This story was written by Sue Storms of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and the title is Booker, Officer McDuff. Booker is a good boy. He has good manners, follows the rules of the household well, and rarely gets himself into trouble. He is also a very good police officer and tattletale when it comes to disciplining the kitty, Hobie. He often lets me know when Hobart is in places he's not supposed to be, the kitchen counter, the dining room table, and on top of the TV. It didn't take him long to learn what is taboo for the kitty and take it upon himself to help with the discipline. This police behavior earned him the nickname Officer McDuff. Little did I know that one day he would earn the respect and admiration of a fellow officer. Booker and I were traveling back from South Dakota, riding in the back seat of Cousin Lynn's Explorer with Cousin Kay riding shotgun. Coming into the town of Lake Crystal, we found ourselves being followed by an officer in a squad car who then put on his lights, so we pulled over. Lynn rarely speeds, so we didn't know why we were being stopped. As the officer was lecturing Lynn about speeding with phrases like, "Didn't you see the sign? People have gotten killed at that intersection," etc., etc., I was sure she was seething. I wondered if she would play her trump card. Lynn is a sergeant with the Minneapolis Police Department, yet she is not one to announce this to everybody. I wondered if she would say anything because it appeared he would give her a ticket. But she played it cool and said nothing while it seemed she was destined to get the ticket. As she started to get out her license and registration, the back seat window started coming down. Then it went up a bit, then down a bit. Up, down, up, down. I remember thinking, what is Lynn doing with the window button? Does she realize what she's doing? I lost my spot there. Oh, I then realized it wasn't Lynn on the button. It was Booker. He was pushing the window button up and down with his paw. Before I knew it, the window was all the way down, his head was out of the window, and he was greeting the cop. I quickly apologized to the officer and rolled the window back up. As he watched the window go up, he asked Lynn, "Are you a police officer as well?" Well, that was it. They chatted, he being a bit humbled when he discovered her status and length of service. He was maybe 24 years old. And voila, no speeding ticket. Kay and I agreed that would never happen to us. How did Booker tell the officer that Lynn was one of the good guys? There's a tiny Minneapolis Police Federation member sticker on the back window. When Booker was rolling the window up and down, the sticker caught the eye of the cop, compelling him to ask about her occupation. Needless to say, Cousin Lynn has a newfound respect for my little man, her rookie colleague, Officer McDuff. He will always be allowed to ride in Lynn's car. Maybe next time he'll be promoted to shotgun status. My tremendous apologies. My finger slid for a second. I'm going, what line was I on? I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know, I really like that story because people always hear about how you can get out of the speeding tickets when you're driving down the road. And what better way than man's best friend to help you out?
and there was no growling involved.
Right. But I gotta share something very quickly here, Sid and Michelle. We got a response already on our Dog Works Radio page on Facebook, and it happens to be from one of our contributors, Jenny. And I'm going to read what she wrote on the Facebook wall. She says, "Sid, Bandit, and Chase both came over to the computer while you were reading their story on Dog Works Radio. They sat there throughout the whole story, and I petted them while you were reading. When their story was over, they both got up, walked away to take a nap. I think they knew that you were reading their story. That is the power of social media, and that's why we do this show, is to have people be engaged with our show. You know, when you're listening to, you know, a radio show driving down the road, hopefully you're not typing on your iPhone or BlackBerry or whatever to comment on, you know, the song that's being played or whatever. But on a show like ours, you can comment right away and really be engaged in what we're doing here at Dogworks Radio.
And that's really high praise if the dogs were listening attentively and not just howling at me.
I agree. So, Michelle, what do you think about Officer McDuff there?
You know, I like that one. It's always good to know how to get out of a speeding ticket.
It is. Okay, so for the big finale, first place of round two of the Pettlitzer Prize, take it away, Sid.
This one came all the way across the big pond. It's by, I may be pronouncing this incorrectly, but I'm trying, Sumaya Rodriguez of Walthamstow, London, England. And her story is called Window of Opportunity. And across the board, everyone on the judges panel chose this as number one. It was very, very fun and impressive and well done, I thought. Window of Opportunity. Agatha was seated beside her bedroom window. It was her only tangible connection with the outside world. She opened it to hear the birds chirping in the trees, to feel the wind blow her hair. But most of all, she used it as a sentry position to watch over Sox, her faithful companion. Sox himself was lazily scratching himself in the grass. He was a scrawny tabby cat with a scar under his right eye. They had been together for 3 years now, and Agatha couldn't imagine life without him. The garden was small and uncultivated. The old fence had a few planks loose. The apple tree no longer bore fruits. The grass needed trimming and the bushes needed pruning. Although the garden used to be a source of pride for Agatha, she barely noticed it now. All her concentration was focused on Sox. Would he be safe in that patch of grass? Only his tail was visible, swishing like a flag in the wind. Agatha tensed as she heard a meow from Sox. Had he sensed something? Despite her daily pep talk, Sox couldn't or wouldn't stand up to his tormentors, hence Agatha's daily window vigils. The worst one was a marmalade cat almost double his size. It would stroll into the garden as bold as brass and scan the area. As soon as it spied Sox, it would hiss and snarl at him. Sox would meow pitifully and edge backwards. At this point, the marmalade cat would pounce on him, scratching and biting his thin body. His howls of pain pleaded with Agatha to race down the stairs and into the garden to rescue him. Cursing the polio which had left her crippled as a child, she would shout and angrily beat her fists on the windowsill. All she could do was hope that the marmalade cat would get bored of such a speedy victory and leave. Sox seemed to understand that Agatha wanted to help him but was unable to. He would jump from the fence onto the roof of the conservatory. From there, he could easily jump through the open window into Agatha's bedroom. Suddenly, the marmalade cat jumped over the fence and landed a few feet away from Sox. Sox could run fast, but his pursuer was always faster. Agatha felt frustrated with her useless legs. Her eyes narrowed to two slits. She wouldn't sit there and let Sox get bitten again. She wouldn't. Her gnarled hands moved with surprising deftness. Grabbing her weapon, she fired at the marmalade cat. Her aim was accurate. A jet of water hit the cat on his back. Hissing with indignation, the marmalade cat beat a hasty retreat. Agatha relaxed, elated. She had done it. Within moments, Sox was climbing into her lap. He purred contentedly as Agatha stroked him. His paw resting on her hand resembled a congratulatory handshake. They had won this battle, but could they win the war?
That's a good one. I thought that one really brought us together in that storytelling moment that we were trying to get in this round was that short story that really told us the passion that we have for our pets. And that did it for me. What do you think, Michelle?
I think she's a spitfire with the water gun.
I remember when I was first reading it, and it's like, my weapon, I shot the cat. I'm like, oh, no. And then when I heard the water hit the cat, I go, oh, that was clever.
Yes,
I was all
yes.
relieved that nobody actually got hurt.
And
but
you
that
know,
shows how involving it was, because I really was distressed, both for Socks and for even the naughty marmalade cat.
Right. And, you know, that's what makes reading so much fun. And you're the author, so this is what you do for a living. But just in that short story, it truly took you there to where they were, you know, you were engulfed in the story. Like you just said, oh, my goodness, she shot the cat. But
mm-hmm.
then just a couple of lines down, you find out that it's the water gun or the hose or the spray bottle or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think what also had this stand out is it read like a piece of fiction,
mm-hmm.
and as opposed to the others, which were great, engaging stories, but you knew they were real. This one kind of takes you a little bit away from that because it really was a work of fiction and in that way, very literary.
Right, right. I agree. Okay, so round three is – go ahead, Michelle.
I was just going to say that I really felt that one truly epitomized what we had asked of round two to be. It was a beautiful piece of literary art that really did capture your attention and take you away for just a brief moment. Kind of like the stories that, you know, your mom or dad would tell you without a book just before bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it, sure. So let's talk about round three. Is it underway right now, Sid?
Yes, it is. The deadline for submission is March 15th. And another incentive for this is I have now added to the whole thing, if you win first prize, you not only get the beautiful award certificate, but I have a really spiffy-looking medal you'll win, too. So everybody better submit. Pardon me?
Two major awards.
Yes, exactly. And this round, we're going for a persuasive essay. I liked how Robert put it. It's kind of like a letter to the editor of a sort. We want to keep it 500 words or fewer. And I am urging people to take a stand on some pet-related issue. And we're not looking to agree with you necessarily, but we want to look at how you present your arguments logically with good examples. I mean, write so that you really want to inform and persuade people to acknowledge your point of view. And if you can totally change their mind, fabulous. But that's not the main focus. It's to look at people using logic and phrasing their words in a very persuasive, vivid manner, as opposed to, you know, getting all hot under the collar and name-calling and saying these people are stupid for raising this kind of dog or, you know, whatever. That'll be disqualified. We don't want that. We want a well-thought-out, well-reasoned piece, short, succinct, to the point, and powerful.
Are you having a particular topic, or can they write about any topic they
want?
Any
topic they want. On the website, I have a whole list of possible types of prompts, but you are not at all limited to that. Things like you can argue for or against breeder versus rescue. You could argue for or against raw food diets or homemade diets or something like that for your pets. You can write about something that's an issue in your area. We have a dog park proposal in our area in Minneapolis that got a whole neighborhood up in arms. They suddenly didn't want it because they thought it would be insulting because the park's name is Martin Luther King Park. Mm-hmm. And they thought having dogs there would be somehow insulting to the memory of Dr. King. And so people were definitely taking sides on that issue. And that would be something, if you've got something going on in your area and you can present the story and try to persuade us, that would be fabulous.
And you know,
it goes on and on.
this is right up my alley. I love to debate with people, and I love to hear other people's point of view, as well as I'm sure everybody on the panel. So I'm really looking forward to hearing some of these persuasive arguments. And I'm always a fan of reading the letters to the editor and mm-hmm. why people have an opinion about one thing or another. And it's not always what you think it is. Like you said, and as you were telling the story about the dog park, I never thought that it was that everybody was against it because it was a a threat to the honoring of Dr. King. I thought, well, they just don't want the dog park. But that's a great argument there of dishonoring Dr. King.
Well, and the thing is, the people who were presenting the argument were saying it would somehow relate to when in the 60s civil rights altercations, some people would release savage dogs on the African Americans.
Oh, I see,
And so it's like, huh? My exercising my golden retriever puppy in this fenced-in area is somehow bringing that memory to you? And, you know, so we had people really feeling strongly about it. We even had folks saying things like, you know, if you do this, kids are going to come and shoot your dog. Mm. You know, it got just dirty. It really mm-hmm. did. And so we want to avoid that. We want to have calmer voices prevailing for whatever the argument. It doesn't have to be that controversial either.
Right.
You know?
Michelle, what were you saying?
I was saying that's down and dirty. That's probably one of the dirtiest things I've heard of in a while regarding dogs and proposed parks and things. I mean, it's pretty downright ugly here in Denver when they talk about the pit bull, Dan. But, Sid, that's pretty dang nasty. Threatening to shoot your dog.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it's not a memorial park like in the sense of the Vietnam Memorial or, you know, somewhere where you go and you contemplate. This is a user's park, you know, a ball field and you know, playground stuff. And
it's
so it's
not carries name. It's not set aside for worship or anything, or even for congregating and having open-air speeches. It sounds
mm-hmm.
like it's just a regular old park that just happens to bear his name.
Mm-hmm. And we got the stories, you know, and I was looking through hundreds of people who had responded to a Star Tribune story about it, and most of them were going, I can't believe this.
Right,
I can't believe anyone's this upset. And I, you know, if I smelled, a drop of racism behind the impetus to have a place to exercise your dog, I would be all over it myself. But I have to confess, I'm not seeing it as
well,
the motivation.
Well,
a lot of the people that don't want the dog parks, they're touting out about property values. And environmental risks, like, oh, my God, you're going to chase away the prairie dogs. That's what we talk about here in Denver. We don't talk about, you know, for crying out loud, the fact that you're going to be degrading, an American hero's legacy because you're going to have your dogs playing on a park named after him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are a person who feels strongly about stopping the park, right into this contest. Just give us your really rational viewpoint, and I'd love to be persuaded by a rational thing, not a threat to poison or shoot my dog, but, you know, give me your reasoning. I want to hear it.
So that will be round three. Like I said, I am looking so forward to that. March 15th is the deadline for
mm-hmm.
submission of round three of the Pulitzer Prize. You can do that through Sid Corpy's website, goodgriefpetloss.com. Sid, we have about a minute. Would you like to say something in closing?
Just head to the blog and click on the Pulitzer Prize link, and it'll give you all the information you need right there. Flood us
Very
with
good.
Stories, guys. Come on.
we're looking forward to it, and we will air them towards the end of March here on DogWorks Radio. Michelle, take us away.
Get out there, write something. I mean, everybody's got something to say. It's time to put pen to paper or fingers to keyboards, and let's get this show on the road. Sid, we really do enjoy the Pulitzer Prize and reading all the stories, and I think that you're bringing a whole new generation into what it means to write. I mean, you don't have to be a published author to enjoy writing. And, you know, bloggers of days new and old, we're totally getting into different ways of blogging. And I think that, you know, the kids need to get it more and more into riding, and I'm seeing too many of them walk away from it just because it's too time consuming, it's too hard. You know what? If you can do a YouTube video, you sure as heck can sit down and write a blog.
I totally agree.
Hey,
we have
sounds like you have a persuasive essay in the making there.
I don't qualify to write one.
That's true. I know we're all disqualified.
On behalf of Sid Corpy and Michelle Forto, this is Robert Forto for DogWorks Radio. We will be back next time. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.